I think most people like to live in a peaceful, non-chaotic world. I think most people like life to be, you know, predictable and low-key, and we don't like a lot of conflict. That's how I was raised. When I was growing up, I grew up in a Christian home, and we didn't have a lot of drama going on. When there was a problem, I mean, it was dealt with very quickly. It didn't linger on for days and weeks. Discipline was given out quickly, and there was a lot of love in our family, and we all knew what was right and wrong. It was clearly set. That made it easy. Everybody knew the rules, and my family was a loving family. So that's the way I was raised. It was easy. It was predictable. Well, easy, not always, but predictable. I kind of liked that part. And one of the things that we were raised with was supporting the police, supporting law enforcement. I'll never forget when I was in fifth grade, and that was about fifth grade, my dad actually painted, he worked in the automobile paint industry, and he painted cars. That's one of the things he did, and he got to paint a police car. And so they had to take that decal off the door, and they had to replace it. And of course, he took it off, and he put it on a piece of cardboard, and he brought it home to me. That was a treasured possession. I had that star, that sheriff's star, sitting in my room proudly, and I was proud because we were raised to respect the police. And here's actually, this is the modern insignia. I'm not sure what it looks like, and I'm sure what it looked like all those years ago, but that was something that I had in my room. But we were raised to respect law enforcement. It was just part of what we did because my dad had grown up with a single mother. His father was an alcoholic. He'd seen a lot of chaos in his life, and he'd even gotten into some trouble with the law when he was a teenager. But he ended up finding the Lord, and he raised us in a Christian home. So we enjoyed a life of general peace and predictability. Now, I realize not everybody's raised that way. Some people are raised, you know, in their worlds, their homes are full of conflict and chaos, and so they bring that out into society. I think that's what we're seeing right now. Some of the problems we're seeing is that people are just bringing that chaos that was in their homes, and they're bringing it out into the world today. But I think most people still like a predictable life. But it doesn't always work out that way. Well, now we're living under this virus, and now things are unpredictable. But they're telling us that this is the new normal, right? So we can't even get used to things happening that we're used to, okay? We don't even know, in any given Sunday, which restaurants are open. It's unpredictable. We don't know. We don't know for sure which college teams are playing football. We have an idea. We hope they're going to follow through. Some parts of the country the teams are playing, some parts aren't. It's just not predictable. The news is full of all this chaos and negativity, and we're kind of used to it. And this, speaking of police, you can't even, police officers are not welcome in many places. So you can't even have that thin blue flag. You can't have that up anymore because that offends people. And active military personnel, I know this firsthand, they are being told not to wear their uniforms in public because there is some pushback going on here. Things are chaotic and unpredictable. And a chaotic, unpredictable life is not new, and it's happened to God's people before. In the Old Testament, we had a man named Joshua. Joshua was raised as a slave in Egypt, so he knew what it was to live in a chaotic world. But he ended up rising to become a leader of Israel. You might remember the history of Joshua. There were 12 spies sent in to check out the promised land, and only two of them spoke up in favor of entering, and Joshua was one of those people. Even as a young man, he was strong and faithful. And when Moses died, Joshua became his successor, and he became a strong, faithful leader. He led the children of Israel to victory. His most well-known accomplishment was the Battle of Jericho. And they ended up going into the promised land and conquering the land. And before Joshua dies, he basically gathers all of Israel and he has them renew their covenant before God. And we find this at the end of Joshua, and it's repeated again at the first part of Judges chapter 2. So it looks like everything's going good for Israel. They're on the right path. They're in the promised land. They've been victorious in battle. But Israel had a way of snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. So how did Israel go from victory in the promised land to a life of constant chaos, ups and downs, and instability? Well, they struggled with the same problem that we struggle with today. So I want to invite you to turn with me to Judges chapter 2. That's where we're going to be today. And there are two reasons why everything fell apart in Israel. Judges 2, and I'm going to be reading verses 7 through 10. The people served the Lord throughout the lifetime of Joshua and of the elders who outlived him, who had seen all the great things the Lord had done for Israel. Joshua, son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110, and they buried him in the land of the inheritance at Timnath-Heres, in the hill country of Ephraim, north of Mount Gaash. After that whole generation had been gathered to their ancestors, another generation grew up who neither knew the Lord nor what he had done for Israel. There were two reasons why everything fell apart for Israel. One reason is the faith was never passed on to the new generation. Verse 7 says, Joshua, that whole generation under Joshua, it says they served the Lord throughout the lifetime of Joshua. So Israel was relatively faithful while Joshua was alive. There were struggles, there were difficulties, but basically they did okay. But they had seen firsthand the miracles God had performed. They saw the walls of Jericho coming down. But they did a poor job of teaching their children. They did not pass on the faith. They did not pass on the expectations to follow God. And a new generation come along who did not know the Lord and did not know what he'd done. Now, I'm sure the kids saw their parents go to worship. I'm sure that they saw them go through religious rituals, but they never learned who God was to mom and dad and to grandma and grandpa. They just never had a relationship with God himself. And, you know, we can look at the younger generation today and we can say, well, they're being irresponsible or they're being disrespectful and they're not respecting God, they're not respecting our country, but we have to accept the blame too. You see, they are our children. They saw our example. So what did we expect from them? What example did we set for them? Did we ever share our faith with them? Did we ever say, now this is why I go to church. This is why I love Jesus. Or did we just protect them from the consequences? Did we tell them, listen, whatever you do is fine. Everything's okay because I love you. Well, it can all be brought to an end in one generation. Proverbs 22:6 says, train up a child in the way he should go, and he will not depart from it. Joshua's generation failed to train up their children. And when they were adults, they ended up being unstable. So another reason for Israel's chaos is that they had a shallow faith. Verse 10 says, after Joshua's generation died, another generation grew up who did not know God or what he had done. So look at Judges again, Judges 2, and I'm going to read verses 11 through 15. Then the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord and served the Baals. They forsook the Lord, the God of their ancestors who brought them out of Egypt. They followed and worshiped various gods of the peoples around them. They aroused the Lord's anger because they forsook him and served Baal and the Ashtoreths. In his anger against Israel, the Lord gave them into the hands of raiders who plundered them. He sold them into the hands of their enemies all around, whom they were no longer able to resist. When Israel went out to fight, the hand of the Lord was against them to defeat them, just as he had sworn to them, and they were in great distress. But where there's no faith, sin abounds. And a new generation had a shallow faith. And this is the pattern that we see throughout the book of Judges. Israel would fall into sin. Chaos and defeat would come. Israel would act religious. They'd call out to God. And God would send a judge to deliver them. The new generation had a shallow faith. They knew how to be religious if they needed to be. Now, all this didn't happen overnight. I mean, Judges takes place over some 400 years. But while mom and dad was alive, while grandma was alive, they went to the festivals, they learned how to be religious, but they tied their faith to a person, to a parent, not to God. And as long as that person was alive, then they were religious. Their faith was tied to what was popular in society. I think this is happening right now. While the older generation was alive, there was worship. There was faithfulness to God. The younger generation went along with it. And I'm sure it was kind of half-hearted. I mean, do we have to go to this festival again? Okay, we're going. That's fine. It was accepted in that society. That was the popular thing to do. But as the generation died, pagan worship was in style. And that would be the downfall of Israel. Israel turned their back on God. They just could not give up the worship of Baal. This was the male Canaanite fertility god. This was the most popular god at the time. And they also worshipped Asherah, which was the female goddess, the fertility of love. These two gods were often linked together. God's people have always struggled with following what's popular and what's trendy. The latest religion. You know, we talk about politics today. Politics is not politics. This is a religion to people. People are taking political philosophy and they're making it their religion. Well, God's anger burned against Israel. They turned and they turned their back on him and they worshiped idols. So what did God do? Verse 14 says, he said to them, into the hands of their enemies all around. He sold them. Remember, God had blessed Joshua. God had given them the promised land. All the enemies had been defeated. There was peace during the time of Joshua. And God left some enemies for each tribe to defeat. But each tribe did not follow through with this. God's hand of protection was on Israel. But they turned away from God. Verse 21 says, I will no longer drive out before them any nations Joshua left when he died. God says basically, you're on your own. And when God takes away your protection, there is chaos. And a shallow faith is not going to sustain you and is not going to protect you. And that's the story of our world right now. See, these are the times right now for a vibrant faith. So I have three expressions for faith that we need in our chaotic world today. Our first expression is our faith must be personal. See, this generation of Israelites did not know God themselves. They had memories of it from the past. That's what they considered faith. As we'll see, when things go wrong, they cried out to God for help. But this is a truth, and this is worth remembering here. It said, this is my thought. You cannot live on the spiritual power of someone else. Let me say that one more time. You cannot live on the spiritual power of someone else. But people try. They don't have a relationship with Jesus, but they connect their past experience with faith. They may say, well, I grew up in a church. My mama brought me every Sunday. Or I remember my Sunday school teacher. How many of you remember your Sunday school teacher? Yeah, I remember my Sunday school teacher. My mama was a devoted Christian. She prayed. She read her Bible. I had one of those mothers. But they themselves, they tie their faith to something that happened in a church building or Sunday school or something a parent taught them. You see, their faith is not personal. They may go to church as long as that person's alive, but they stop when they die. I remember an elder and his wife, and they were such a joy. They were so faithful to the Lord. They were there all the time. They were the church's biggest supporters as a minister. I just loved having them. And They were married almost 60 years, and then he passed away. And it was a very sad day when he passed away because everybody loved him. But sadly, the wife seldom returned to church. She would hardly ever come back, if ever. So it became very clear who the one was that really had the faith and who the one was that just kind of went along with everything. God calls us to a personal relationship with Jesus. Not a faith in a church, not a faith in a preacher, not a faith in a parent, not a faith in a spouse. See, when we stand before Jesus, it's not going to matter how many years we went to church or if grandma was a devoted follower. The question will be, do you know Jesus? Did you make him your Savior? Were you talking to him? Were you serving him? Were you confessing your sins to him? If not, he's going to say, I never knew you. In our chaotic world, we need to be people who express faith. A second expression of faith is our faith must be inspired by the faith of the past. Let's look back at Judges again. Judges 2, and I want to look at verses 16 through 19. Then the Lord raised up judges who saved them out of the hands of these raiders. Yet they would not listen to their judges, but prostituted themselves to other gods and worshiped them. They quickly turned from the ways of their ancestors who had been obedient to the Lord's commands. Whenever the Lord raised up a judge for them, he was with the judge and saved them out of the hands of their enemies as long as the judge lived. For the Lord relented because of their groaning under those who oppressed and afflicted them. But when the judge died, the people returned to the ways, even more corrupt than those of their ancestors, following other gods, serving and worshiping them. They refused to give up their evil practices and stubborn ways. Now, while our faith should not be based on somebody else, the Bible has given us a history of people of the faith, heroes of the faith. And that's a good reason why we study books like Judges, because this book covers the history of Israel from Joshua all the way up to Samuel. And during this time, there was no king. There was 12 tribes of Israel. They didn't have any government. They just were under the direct leadership of God. But people were doing their own thing. So there was anarchy, there was chaos, and people were doing what they wanted. Enemies came and started destroying. Verse 16, it says, then the Lord raised up judges. That little theme is throughout the book. God is raising up judges. You know, I kind of think of this like the Old West. Things would get really bad, and then a new sheriff would come to town. Junior would like this illustration. And the sheriff would get rid of all the bad guys and fix everything, and things would be great again. Some of the sheriffs were kind of rough. They weren't perfect people. They weren't fancy kings of royalty. They just enforced the laws. They fought against idolatry. These were mostly military leaders, but there was 8 men and 1 woman. Now, next week, we're going to talk about the woman. It's kind of a rare case. She's special. She's rare in the Bible. In all, there were 13 judges. God has given us examples. And this is one of the reasons we study the Old Testament, as we learn from the bad choices and we're inspired by the good choices, by the heroic deeds. And I think that's a good reason for the series. So, can you think of somebody that has inspired your faith? Who inspired your faith? Well, I'm going to show you one of my inspirations. You might recognize him because he came here one time and preached for me. This is about 8 years ago. Anyway, this is my preacher, dear friend that I love very much, Lloyd. And Lloyd was always the man with a good word, had a phenomenal sense of humor, was an amazing letter writer. He would write letters to everybody in a church. He was always there when you needed him, and he was always there to preach a good word. And he tried to retire 2 times. I'm not sure how seriously he took his retirement. He retired the first time, and they were all ready just to enjoy their life. And, of course, a little church wanted him to be their preacher. And he said, okay. So he was there for several years. And then he was going to retire again. This time he was really going to retire. He moved to Georgia. He was going to retire where his wife is from. And of course, there was another little church needed a preacher. And he spent his retirement preaching. And near the end of his life, he started getting to the point where he was a big guy. He had a hard time managing stairs, and the pulpit was up where the stairs were. And one of the elders said, we had to continue talking to him. Listen, Lloyd, you don't have to climb the stairs, because he would struggle up there to get to the pulpit. So finally, they moved the pulpit down to the floor. Finally, his health just got really rough. He had to retire. And it was a short time. It was several months. I don't know exactly how long it was, but he ended up passing away. And he was my inspiration. He was the one that set the bar very high. He's the guy that I think, well, if I could be a minister like that, that would be wonderful. Who's your hero of the faith? I was talking to Patricia, her hero, Miss Lillian Hillis. She remembers when she was very young, a few years ago, they actually had Sunday school class inside her car. That's right. She was teaching her inside the car right here. And she was just one of those people that set an example all the time. And when she got older, she was realizing that she gathered a group of people together, a group of ladies together, and said, listen, I'm not going to be here forever. You guys need to step up. You ladies need to step up. And you need to be leaders. You need to take over. What an example. Those are examples in the faith. Who's inspired your faith? God has put people in our lives to inspire us, to motivate us. And when life gets rough and chaotic, we can remember the faith that they showed us. It pushes us along, and we need to be people that are inspired, that follow their faith. The third expression, our faith needs to serve as an example to others. It's been said, Christianity is never more than a generation from extinction. This was the failure of Israel. They didn't do a good job training up the new generation. And it's evidenced today. All it takes is a virus to expose how poorly the church has done at passing on their faith to the next generation. And we're sorely missing people who will be an example, who will stand up for what's right. Well, I realize that people say, have you ever thought about this? Well, if my dad was alive, he would not stand for what's going on. Have you heard this? Oh, my grandpa was alive. He fought in the Second World War. He would not be happy. He would not stand for this today. Well, they're not here. They set the example for us. Are we following through with their example? We need to be as bold and as vigilant as they were. Does our commitment to the Lord match theirs? You know, our world needs heroes of the faith. We need examples. A hero of the faith, it can just simply be somebody that lives an example. The younger generation is not going to tell you this, but they're watching your example. They're not going to listen necessarily to what you say, but they're going to watch what you do. Well, someone may say, well, I was never a good example when I was younger. I wasn't a good role model for how I lived and how I talked. But it's never too late to set a good example. And you can be an example at any time. You can start at any time. You can make the last 5 years of your life the most productive years in the faith. I have seen it happen before. The last 5 years can be your best year. So why not set out to be an example right now? Sometimes the best sermon is a changed life. You know, the world around us may be predictable, unpredictable and chaotic, but Christians, they are people of the faith. They're inspired by people of the past, and they live a constant Christian example. They show the way. They're steady when the ground is shaky. You know, when somebody gives their life to Jesus, and they do it in a public way, they are setting an example. So they believe in the Lord. and they turn from their sin, and then they come up and then they publicly confess Jesus. That's setting an example. When you're standing before people and you tell, listen, I'm going to give my life to Jesus, that's setting the example. And then they follow through with baptism. Baptism is that picture of somebody dead in sin to alive in Christ. It's an actual step of faith. It's an act of faith that God uses. Even a child can see somebody baptized and learn something from that. So when we come to our time of invitation, I have to ask you, have you done that first step? That first step of just being faithful to God. Have you been faithful just in taking that first step? And maybe you've done that. How's your example coming along? Are you living an example? I can tell you right now, the fact that you're here today is an example. Because a lot of people are using this time right now just to lay out a church. But I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're setting an example. And don't think that people don't notice when you go to church. It sets an example. So we have our time of invitation. And we're going to be singing a beautiful song, beautiful old hymn. This is one of those ones we haven't sang in quite a while. But it talks about that faith from the older generation. Let's all stand as we sing.